Chapter 23. His father was a gentleman, that's more than you ever were, screamed Mrs. Hayes. His father was a man of spirit, no cowardly sneak of a carpenter, Mr. Hayes. Tom has noble blood in his veins, for all he has a tailor's appearance, and if his mother had had a right, she would be now in a coach and six. I wish I could find my father, said Tom, for I think Polly Briggs and I would look mighty well in a coach and six. Tom fancied that, if his father was a count at the time of his birth, he must be a prince now, and, indeed, went among his companions by the latter august title. Eh, Tom, that he would, cried his mother, looking at him fondly. With a sword by my side, and a hat and feather, there's never a lord at St. James would cut a finer figure. After a little more of this talk, in which Mrs. Hayes let the company know her high opinion of her son who, as usual, took care to show his extreme contempt for his stepfather, the latter retired to his occupations. The lodger, Mrs. Springett, who had never said a word all this time, retired to her apartment on the second floor, and, pulling out their pipes and tobacco, the old gentleman and the young one solaced themselves with half an hour's more talk and smoking, while the thrifty Mrs. Hayes, opposite to them, was busy with her books. What's in the confessions? Said Mr. Billings to Dr. Wood. There were six of them besides Mac. Two for sheep, four housebreakers. But nothing of consequence, I fancy. There's the paper, said Wood, archly. Eat for yourself, Tom. Mr. Tom looked at the same time very fierce and very foolish, for, though he could drink, swear, and fight as well as any lad of his inches in England, reading was not among his accomplishments. Tell you what, doctor, said he, you have no bantering with me, for I'm not the man that will bear it, me. And he threw a tremendous swaggering look across the table. I want you to learn to read, Tommy dear. Look at your mother there over her books. She keeps them as neat as a scrivener now, and at 20 she could make never a stroke. Your godfather speaks for your good, child, and for me, thou knowest that I have promised thee a gold-headed cane and periwig on the first day, that thou canst read me a column of the Flying Post. Hang the periwig, said Mr. Tom, testily. Et my godfather read the paper himself, if he has a liking for it. Whereupon the old gentleman put on his spectacles, and glanced over the sheet of whitey-brown paper, which, ornamented with a picture of a gallows at the top, contained the biographies of the seven unlucky individuals who had that morning suffered the penalty of the law. With the six heroes who came first in the list we have nothing to do, but have before us a copy of the paper containing the life of number seven, and which the doctor read in an audible voice. Apton McShane. The seventh victim to his own crimes was the famous highwayman, Captain McShane, so well known as the Irish Fire Eater. The captain came to the ground in a fine white lawn shirt and nightcap, and, being a papist in his religion, was attended by Father O'Flaherty, Popish priest, and chaplain to the Bavarian envoy. Captain McShane was born of respectable parents, in the town of Clonakilty, in Ireland, being descended from most of the kings in that country. He had the honor of serving their majesties King William and Queen Mary, and Her Majesty Queen Anne, in Flanders and Spain, and obtained much credit from my lords Marlborough and Peterborough for his valor. But being placed on half pay at the end of the war, Ensign McShane took to evil courses, and, frequenting the bagnios and dice houses, was speedily brought to ruin. Being at this pass, he fell in with the notorious Captain Wood, and they two together committed many atrocious robberies in the inland counties. But these being too hot to hold them, they went into the west, where they were unknown. Here, however, the day of retribution arrived. For, having stolen three pewter pots from a public house, they, under false names, were tried at Exeter, and transported for 7 years beyond the sea. Thus it is seen, that justice never sleeps, but, sooner or later, is sure to overtake the criminal. On their return from Virginia, a quarrel about booty arose between these two, and McShane killed Wood in a combat that took place between them near to the town of Bristol. But a wagon coming up, McShane was obliged to fly without the ill-gotten wealth. So true is it that wickedness never prospers. 2 days afterwards, McShane met the coach of Miss McGraw, a Scotch lady and heiress, going, for lumbago and gout, to the bath. He at first would have robbed this lady, but such were his arts that he induced her to marry him, and they lived together for 7 years in the town of Edinburgh, in Scotland, he passing under the name of Colonel Geraldin. The lady dying, and McShane having expended all her wealth, he was obliged to resume his former evil courses, in order to save himself from starvation, whereupon he robbed a Scotch lord, by name the Lord of Whistlebinky, of a mull of snuff, for which crime he was condemned to the Tolbooth prison at Edinburgh, in Scotland, and whipped many times in public. These deserved punishments did not at all alter Captain McShane's disposition, and on the 17th of February last, he stopped the Bavarian envoy's coach on Blackheath, coming from Dover, and robbed His Excellency and his chaplain, taking from the former his money, watches, star, a fur cloak, his sword, a very valuable one, and from the latter a Romish missal, out of which he was then reading, and a case bottle. The Bavarian envoy, said Tom parenthetically. Why, master, Bankleader was his lordship's regimental tailor in Germany, and is now making a court suit for him. It will be a matter of £100 to him, I warrant. Dr. Wood resumed his reading. A Romish missal, out of which he was reading, and a case bottle. By means of the famous Mr. Wilde, this notorious criminal was brought to justice, and the case bottle and missal have been restored to Father O'Flaherty. During his confinement in Newgate, Mr. McShane could not be brought to express any contrition for his crimes, except that of having killed his commanding officer. For this Woody pretended an excessive sorrow, and vowed that usquebaugh had been the cause of his death. Indeed, in prison he partook of no other liquor, and drank a bottle of it on the day before his death. He was visited by several of the clergy and gentry in his cell, among others, by the popish priest whom he had robbed, Father O'Flaherty, before mentioned, who attended him likewise in his last moments, if that idolatrous worship may be called attention, and likewise by the father's patron, the Bavarian ambassador, His Excellency Count Maximilian de Galgenstein. As old Wood came to these words, he paused to give them utterance. What? Max? Screamed Mrs. Hayes, letting her ink bottle fall over her ledgers. Why, be hanged if it meant my father, said Mr. Billings. Your father, sure enough, unless there be others of his name, and unless the scoundrel is hanged, said the doctor sinking his voice, however, at the end of the sentence. Mr. Billings broke his pipe in an agony of joy. Think we'll have the coach now, mother, says he. And I'm blessed, if Polly Briggs shall not look as fine as a duchess. Polly Briggs is a low slut, Tom, and not fit for the likes of you, His Excellency's son. Oh, fie! You must be a gentleman now, sirrah, and I doubt whether I shan't take you away from that odious tailor's shop altogether. To this proposition Mr. Billings objected altogether. For, besides Mrs. Briggs before alluded to, the young gentleman was much attached to his master's daughter, Mrs. Margaret Gretel, or Gretchen Bankleader. No, says he. Here will be time to think of that hereafter, ma'am. If my pa makes a man of me, why, of course, the shop may go to the deuce, for what I care. But we had better wait, look you, for something certain, before we give up such a pretty bird in the hand as this. He speaks like Solomon, said the doctor. I always said he would be a credit to his old mother, didn't I, Brock? Cried Mrs. Cat, embracing her son very affectionately. Credit to her, eh, I warrant, a real blessing. And dost thou want any money, Tom? For a lord's son must not go about without a few pieces in his pocket. and I tell thee, Tommy, thou must go and see his lordship, and thou shalt have a piece of brocade for a waistcoat, thou shalt, eh, and the silver-hilted sword I told thee of. But oh, Tommy, Tommy, have a care, and don't be a drawing of it in naughty company at the gaming houses, or at the a drawing of fiddlesticks, mother. If I go to see my father, I must have a reason for it. And instead of going with a sword in my hand, I shall take something else in it. The lad is a lad of nouse, cried Dr. Wood, although his mother does spoil him so cruelly. Look you, Madam Cat. Did you not hear what he said about Bankleader and the clothes? Tommy will just wait on the count with his lordship's breeches. A man may learn a deal of news in the trying on of a pair of breeches. And so it was agreed, that in this manner the son should at first make his appearance before his father. Mrs. Cat gave him the piece of brocade, which, in the course of the day, was fashioned into a smart waistcoat, for Bankleader's shop was close by, in Cavendish Square. Mrs. Credle, with many blushes, tied a fine blue ribbon round his neck, and, in a pair of silk stockings, with gold buckles to his shoes, Master Billings looked a very proper young gentleman. And, Tommy, said his mother, blushing and hesitating, should his lordship ask after you want to know, if your mother is alive, you can say she is, and well, and often talks of old times. And, Tommy, after another pause, you needn't say anything about Mr. Hayes, only say I'm quite well. Mrs. Hayes looked at him as he marched down the street, a long, long way. Tom was proud, and gay in his new costume, and was not unlike his father. As she looked, lo, Oxford Street disappeared, and she saw a green common, and a village, and a little inn. There was a soldier leading a pair of horses about on the green common, and in the inn sat a cavalier, so young, so merry, so beautiful. Oh, what slim white hands he had, and winning words, and tender, gentle blue eyes. Was it not an honor to a country lass that such a noble gentleman should look at her for a moment? Had he not some charm about him, that she must needs obey when he whispered in her ear, "Come, follow me." As she walked towards the lane that morning, how well she remembered each spot as she passed it, and the look it wore for the last time. How the smoke was rising from the pastures, how the fish were jumping and plashing in the mill stream. There was the church, with all its windows lighted up with gold, and yonder were the reapers sweeping down the brown corn. She tried to sing as she went up the hill. What was it? She could not remember, but oh, how well she remembered the sound of the horse's hoofs, as they came quicker, quicker, nearer, nearer. How noble he looked on his great horse. Was he thinking of her, or were they all silly words which he spoke last night, merely to pass away the time, and deceive poor girls with? Would he remember them, would he? Cat, my dear, here, cried Mr. Brock, alias Captain, alias Dr. Wood, here's the meat a getting cold, and I am longing for my breakfast. As they went in he looked her hard in the face. Hat, still at it, you silly girl? I've been watching you these 5 minutes. Cat, and be hanged, but I think a word from Galgenstein, and you would follow him as a fly does a treacle pot. They went in to breakfast, but though there was a hot shoulder of mutton and onion sauce, Mrs. Catherine's favorite dish, she never touched a morsel of it. In the meanwhile, Mr. Thomas Billings, in his new clothes which his mama had given him, in his new ribbon which the fair Miss Bankleader had tied round his neck, and having His Excellency's breeches wrapped in a silk handkerchief in his right hand, turned down in the direction of Whitehall, where the Bavarian envoy lodged. But, before he waited on him, Mr. Billings, being excessively pleased with his personal appearance, made an early visit to Mrs. Briggs, who lived in the neighborhood of Swallow Street, and who, after expressing herself with much enthusiasm regarding her Tommy's good looks, immediately asked him what he would stand to drink. Raspberry gin being suggested, a pint of that liquor was sent for, And so great was the confidence and intimacy subsisting between these two young people, that the reader will be glad to hear that Mrs. Polly accepted every shilling of the money which Tom Billings had received from his mama the day before, nay, could with difficulty be prevented from seizing upon the cut velvet breeches which he was carrying to the nobleman for whom they were made. Having paid his adieu to Mrs. Polly, Mr. Billings departed to visit his father. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.